It's always distressing when people lose their homes to bushfires, and there's been far too much of that in the last few days. But are there ways we can protect our families and our homes better than we do now? It turns out there are some small things which can make a huge difference when disaster strikes. If you've taken steps to help protect your home against bushfire, what advice can you pass on to us? Tell us on Facebook or send a text. 0418 226 576 is our number. Justin Leonard is with us. He researches how best to manage bushfire risks. He's from the CSIRO. Justin, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you.
Now, what's the advice for people that are in the thick of this right now, anxiously watching the warnings in their area?
Well, I guess it's a case of making that critical decision about whether it's still safe to actually leave the area. That's obviously the primary way you can ensure you and your family are safe. So many people leave that decision too late or don't sort of check whether it's still actually safe to take to the roads. There is a point nearly for everyone where staying in the house actually becomes safer than taking to the streets once the fire's sort of upon the area.
But it's a bit late to be cleaning your eaves at that point and shifting the wood pile.
That's right. You really have to shift from the priority of worrying about your home and your assets to just, you know, purely a life safety focus.
So we hear the term bushfire season a lot and how it's creeping forward, but how does preparation for fires vary depending on what part of Australia you're in?
Well, I guess the seasons are quite different from the far north to the south. So you hear that Queensland's already entering its fire season. So that's a little bit early, but not too far from being unusual. Victoria obviously gets its fire season much later, sort of in December or early January.
So the preparations start much earlier than that, don't they?
Yeah, and we should really think about sort of preparing or being or acknowledging being in a bushfire prone area, you know, all year round. It's an inevitable part of our place and lifestyle. And I think that's where preparation really begins, is that acknowledgement. Yeah.
And we might see that preparation going on in our area, people burning off or clearing brush. But is all that preparation necessary if we're building new homes and they're built to the latest fire regulations?
Oh, most definitely. It's all the little details around your home that really make a huge difference. And it is the obvious things like managing your grass and where you put your wood heap, but it's a lot more intrinsic in like what type of fences you might use, where you might put your retaining walls, what you might make them out of, what plants you select for your garden, even where you choose to park your caravan through the summer period. Like, is it too close to your house? What if it burns? There's so many sort of interrelated things that really sort of admitting that fire is one of those important aspects that actually influence how you might arrange things and choose different approaches and materials for all the things around your home.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot to consider before you even get to materials, but once you get there, is enough information available to homeowners and builders about the safest materials these days?
I think it's challenging in that many people would find lots of useful information from product suppliers, but at the same time, there's lots of misinformation. And so it's a bit of a minefield of sort of trying to navigate what's really out there. We're trying to put together a best practice bushfire design guide at the moment to hopefully help provide that sort of impartial information and help people put on their sort of filters and become quite savvy in terms of recognising what the best paths are.
Thinking of the word savvy, that might well apply to people who've lived in an area for a while and seen how it can go in a bushfire season. But we've got a lot of people lately in some parts of Australia moving out to those peri-urban areas and country areas looking for a tree change. Are they prepared enough?
By and large, no. It's usually the way the community embraces those newcomers and brings them up to speed. So a really integrated community is going to really support those newcomers and help them, whereas a disconnected community, you're going to get this huge range of, you know, completely aware and engaged through to, what's a bushfire kind of process.
I'll just wait for the truck to arrive.
Yes, yeah.
So you talk also at the CSIRO about connected risk. So a connected community can be good, but connected risk is not. What is it?
In a bushfire sense, there's lots of things that can unfold where a bushfire can obviously directly attack your home, but it can attack all the things around your home. It might, for instance, take hold of your neighbour's house, and then all of a sudden your neighbour's house burning down is the most critical threat to you. And bushfires are very much like that, where everything around you becomes this sort of integrated process. And it's a really good way to maybe confront that at the local community scale, where it's not about you keeping your house in order. It's about you and your neighbours and you all working together as an integrated sort of approach. In terms of life safety as well, there's so much where your neighbours are part of your support network. There might be a really good house in the street and you all congregate to that house in a bushfire, for example. Those networks and linkages are absolutely critical.
And we're going to see much more population density in some parts of Australia. What are some design strategies people can use if they're that can help limit the risk from our neighbours as we get more connected?
So I guess we can do really clever things about how we design our houses not to burn down from our neighbours. And one of them is, if we really, you know, succumb to this inevitability of really dense suburbs, we can actually deliberately build our houses like, for instance, duplexes on a boundary of on one boundary, which gives us or affords us space to separate from our neighbour on the other boundary. So that stops sort of houses burning as a line all the way down the street, which often happens here in Australia and in America.
Is there a problem too with people starting to build their houses, particularly in the new developments, right up to the fence lines? You don't get that side yard anymore.
Yeah, so I guess the minimum you see people typically build is like 0.9 metres from the boundary, and that's sort of defined by regulation. And that's the distance you're allowed to build your house from your fence line without any special fire protection measures. So at the normal minimum separation we're allowed, it's almost inevitable that houses can burn their neighbours. And the bushfire building regulations don't actually account for your neighbour's house as being a potential fire source. So even regulated houses burn down in a line along a street. So it's definitely something as a community we need to really acknowledge and step up to.
Well, that sounds like the fire of London, just burning through everything. I'm speaking with Justin Leonard. He's a researcher in urban planning and design for bushfire risk. And if you've taken steps to protect your home against bushfire, share your advice with us on Facebook. So, Justin, how much is it about individual homeowners taking responsibility for their properties and, as you've said, groups of neighbours? And how much is down to what goes on in the municipality generally, things like the council's approach to land clearing or designing community areas for, say, lower temperatures? Are there bigger things we could look at?
I think it's inevitable that it's down to the individual. There's only so much you can do at a township planning scale and a municipal scale. There's just simply no way that you can solve all the aspects and issues that will define an individual's risk unless the individual is just fully engaged, understands fire, knows and understands what a fire can and can't do when they're in amongst it. It's really down to what's in what the individual actually knows and understands and hopefully has prepared for in the short, medium and long term before that event strikes.
And how good is our education system for homeowners and, in fact, renters too, people living in bushfire areas who might not have control over their home?
I think the resources are there for the people that proactively reach out and seek out that information. It's not there for the people that have a busy lifestyle and more or less rely on the minimum, you know, warnings and priorities in their life. They often don't get sufficient information or awareness to about what they really should know as a minimum sort of set of information.
I was reading how some bushfire authorities recommend that you have 10,000 litres of water as well as a firefighting pump and hoses. And I thought that's a big ask in some areas that are facing drought for starters. But do people remember to plan that kind of infrastructure when they're at the very start looking at the basics of planning a home in an area that might be subject to fire?
Often not, but there's just so many key opportunities in that planning phase where, for instance, your water tanks can be, you know, rainwater capture and reuse for your garden. So instead of putting in a 10,000 litre tank, you put in a 20,000 litre tank and look after, you know, 10,000 litres for firefighting. There's just so many sort of integrated processes that improve your lifestyle and your sustainability and your energy use, but really extend your how well you're going to go in a bushfire.
I'm not sure if plants are your purview, Justin, but a texter has, Meg from Tamworth says, don't have oleanders close to the house. They explode in a fire. Is that true?
Yeah, so there's a huge range of information online about good and bad bushfire behaving plants. And I guess when you think about the plants particularly close to your house, you really have to focus on avoiding those types of plants. Cypress is another key plant that really is problematic and shouldn't be anywhere near the house at all. But plants overall aren't sort of the enemy. I see so many scenarios where people are too proactive in clearing the trees and the plants away, and they actually create quite a strong wind exposure and a lot of sun access on their house. So it actually dries the landscape out around them earlier, and the winds really get in and buffet the houses in these fire events where, you know, a lot of retained canopy and stuff can create a nice little sort of moist microclimate and filter the embers out. So, you know, all trees aren't bad, but if you look at the structure of them, that really tells you a lot about it. So smooth bark eucalypts, for example, are really good. They don't create the embers. The embers actually come from the bark. And there's a thing called the CFA plant key, which actually goes through all of the, you don't need to be a plant genius to work it out, but it just actually breaks down plants in terms of their structure and what you can physically see, and you can start to learn how to, you know, pick a really good plant against a really bad plant in a bushfire just from its characteristics.
So the CFA plant key, I'm assuming that's made in Victoria because it's the country fire authority, but it might well be applicable to other areas. Justin Leonard, what about the bins? The bins are an issue apparently. What do we need to do to stay safe in terms of where we put our bins?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, anything plastic or made of timber can be a risk near your house. So anything from your wood heap to where you place your wheelie bins can be a key critical fire source that's enough to break a window or start burning your facade. If you think of a bushfire, it's going to be an ember storm that will sort of create small flame ignitions in any little nook and cranny around your house, but it's also a surface fire that will travel and take out and consume every possible continuous surface material. It's going to find all those elements like bins and wood heaps and vehicles.
And Justin, just finally, what about builders and developers? We've talked a lot about individual homeowner responsibility. Are builders and developers being held to tough enough regulations around fire safety and fire readiness?
Well, those regulations do exist, but as I highlighted before, there's really no chance that they can cover all of the key aspects. And unfortunately, bushfires seem to exploit the weakest links or the most minor overlooked feature. So it really comes down to, yes, there's building regulations and planning regulations that cover some of the issues, and then it comes down to the individual to have that sort of shared responsibility to solve the rest of those issues.
And so if people are heading into their bushfire seasons around Australia, and obviously the house is already there, it's not in the planning stages, what are a couple of things that people can do to really increase their fire readiness?
Really look at all of those features around the house. Anything combustible, you might look at your deck or a set of stairs or a wood heap as going, oh, well, it's timber, it's pretty moist, it probably won't burn. Well, just remember, in a bushfire event, the weather conditions are extremely dry. The same reason why the bush burns will be the reason why all those combustible features around your house will be super dry and really easy to ignite. So just try to imagine how a fire behaves and what it's like for a house to experience that fire, and use that intuitive knowledge to think about the way you might change your deck when it needs renewal, and you know, let's go for this type of fence instead of that type of fence, and maybe I do need to re-landscape a few plants around my house.
And most of us would hope never have to imagine how a bushfire behaves, but we need to, don't we, in certain parts of Australia. Justin Leonard, thanks so much for joining us on Life Matters.
It's a pleasure, thanks.
Justin's a researcher at the CSIRO in managing bushfire risks, and this is Life Matters on RN.